Welcome to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. The ultimate insider's guide from signing day to the national championship game and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast.
It is the coaching carousel spinning round and round and round. We've got college football playoff debates, and, you know, we had to go talk to somebody who was right in the middle of one of the biggest stories in college football in 2017. Dennis Dodd, got to bring him on the podcast right now. Dennis, you were in South Bend. You had like a two-part story for CBSSports.com talking about, you know, what was going on with this particular team, with Brian Kelly, with, you know, what a college football playoff with Notre Dame might look like. And then as you were an analyst on SEC Live prior to Florida and South Carolina, you had a great call about the Miami-Notre Dame game. You said after being with this team, they play in a lot of big games, but I don't think that they know what they're getting into at Miami. You know what? Let's take me through your time at Notre Dame. You know what stood out to you and what brought you to that kind of conclusion?
Well, it was just the fact that Brian Kelly was trying to make this, oh, this is just another game, which it on its surface is okay and what every coach wants to do. But having seen, I mean, you guys have seen how long it's been at Miami, and having covered Miami games and been down there, and our office is down there, so we're enmeshed in a lot of Kane stuff. I don't know if they, you know, just the fact that they sold out Hard Rock Stadium was a big deal to me, because they hardly ever do it. And I think the fans saw this as a turning point. And that was just an observation. I thought Miami would win the game going in. Notre Dame was supremely confident, but I thought it was strange going into the game that they wanted to throw with a 53% passer in Brandon Wimbush, and obviously it cost them. So and then things just snowballed. But I that's what I got from Notre Dame, that this was they were going to treat it as just another game, and, you know, steady as she goes, because that's how they'd gotten there in the first place.
Didn't it kind of remind you in a way of that of Notre Dame Alabama? Coming out of the gate, trying to isolate Tyler Eifert against Dee Milliner and trying to get cute. And then all of a sudden, this big, strong, fast, physical team is just like, because you tried to get cute early, it's just bowled you over and created a deficit. I mean, the bug eyes that were on Notre Dame's sideline reminded me of that 2012 national championship game.
There was that. And for those who remember, I think the best comparison is 1985.
I don't.
Miami 58. Notre Dame 7, which really kicked off the rivalry, because Jimmy Johnson took advantage of really a depleted Notre Dame in the final days of Jerry Faust, and really needlessly put it on him. And Miami fans have never forgotten that. And again, the same type of athletes, at least on defense, fast, well-coached. Manny Diaz has done a great job there at Miami, native Miami guy. His dad was a mayor of Miami. He created the turnover chain. And he's been at, I think I counted up, six different jobs since 2006, not because he's been an itinerant coach, because he's been very good. And just, you know, continuing that at Miami. But it just really reminded, and it was that way because it was the most points scored in the rivalry against Notre Dame since that 85 game, and largest margin of victory since that 85 game.
Dennis, were you at the game?
I was, yes.
So, yeah, like one of my big things, and Chip, we touched on it briefly in the recap on Monday or Sunday, but I feel like Miami, more so maybe than any program in college football, Miami being back is a lot more of an intangible vibe, swagger, feeling. And when I started doubting my Notre Dame pick, which I didn't doubt at all until 2 hours before kick. When
did you change it?
I didn't, but when I saw the tweets rolling in about Miami, you know, turnover chains everywhere. The intensity around that place sounded like it was something that Miami hasn't had in a long time. And And to me, that's like more than the undefeated record right now. That is Miami being back.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Or like, observations of just the atmosphere and vibe around that place.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I got out of my car, and calling it a buzz would not be accurate. It was more like a hum. You could just feel it throughout the whole tailgate, throughout around the stadium, that this, you know, this, at least the game, Miami was back to playing a big game like this. And I got out of my car. I don't know if I've ever seen this before. In the parking lot, they had not only a souvenir stand, but attached to it, a cold beer cooler. You could just grab a 12-pack right there in the parking lot and go from there. I don't know if I've ever seen that in the SEC, because I know it's prohibited in the SEC, but it was neat. And there were people just getting after it. And when they opened the gates, they flooded in. I was able to overlook one of the O ramps on the stadium. I came out of the press box when Miami walked into the stadium, whatever they call it, the cane walk or whatever. And there may have been 10,000 people lined up on that path, with the band and everything cheering them on. And I've got video of it. I don't know if I posted it on Twitter. I did on Facebook. It was pretty amazing.
So do you think, before we need to get on to coaching changes quickly, but
yeah.
Do you think that Miami's run right now is sustainable? We've seen it twice in prime time. Now, can they do it at noon against Virginia and Pittsburgh in order to be undefeated going into that ACC championship game against Clemson?
It would be so Miami of them to lose to Virginia, or on the Friday after Thanksgiving, I think, at Pittsburgh. Isn't that right?
Yep, noon kickoff.
You know, after all this, it would just be so Miami of them. You know, Larry Coker, Al Golden, you know, there was so many of those games in those years. But let's assume they do. I guess you have to start about talking about how they match up with Clemson, and I think defensively, obviously, they do match up. I would have to take a deeper dive into how they can move the ball against that Clemson defense, which, you know, look, hasn't been great lately. So Clemson would be favored, but Miami might be on this epic ride that, you know, none of us have ever seen in 15 years.
Yeah. All right, let's dig into it. We've got Tennessee now finally open. At what, and I've asked this to Barton, and we've kicked this around with anyone who's come on, at what part of your brain are you actually entertaining the idea that we get a couple rock star hires during this coaching cycle? And I would consider Chip Kelly a rock star hire.
Yeah.
I would consider John Gruden a rock star hire. Where do you think this could get?
Go ahead, Barton. I'll follow up. Go ahead.
Okay. I mean, I think Chip Kelly would have been one I would have been surprised to see at Florida as we entered this sort of coaching carousel. I personality-wise, he just doesn't seem like he's a fit in the SEC. He's a little bit prickly. You know, you gotta jump through a lot of hoops. You got a glad hand. You gotta, you know, have to do a lot of that stuff in the SEC. You got to deal with a crazy fan base. And even at Nebraska, there's that element as well, which is why, you know, and part of me just expects Chip to try to hold out for a UCLA type of gig. But, man, I don't know. The buzz seems to be real. There seems to be some legitimate movement here. And I don't believe in the John Gruden train, but who knows? I guess Dennis, where are you at in your belief that there's something real happening right now with Chip Kelly?
Yeah, I agree. As we take this on Wednesday, there is some buzz and some real, belief that Chip Kelly has been identified there. But there's a lot of factors. You know, is this his agent playing him against another school? Does he really want to be there? As you mentioned, he's not a guy that lives for recruiting day to day, which is what those SEC fans do. And I think another thing people have to think about is, if he goes to Florida, is he just a bridge coach? If he succeeds, then I would think he'd probably go to the NFL. But I think that's where his heart is right now, at least at this point in his career. Whereas if you get a Scott Frost and you know, identify him as your guy, a guy that wants to be there 15 or 20 years if he gets going. He's still young enough. He's 42 years old. So I'd have reservations. But the chip train may be, if he is showing interest, the chip train may be so far down the track that's going to happen. Don't forget, these two, Chip and Scott Frost, have the same agent. Trace Armstrong, and Trace Armstrong turned Joe Oliva at LSU inside out last year. I think we all remember that. You know, dangling Tom Herman and getting what he wanted to wake up those Texas administrators that, hey, this is real. You need to go after him now. And they did. He is a mastermind, I would dare say, at this sort of thing. So we'll see. It'd be interesting.
Where does Jimbo Fisher fit into this math? Because if the chip train is on the go, and the mastermind Trace Armstrong has two of the hottest names in the cycle, and you've got Texas A&M, who reportedly has sort of zeroed in on Jimbo Fisher, you know, where, like, do you see the carousel impacting and all of a sudden leaving Florida State open?
I think there's two parts of that. I think the part is the Jimbo train, or the Jimbo thing, I think is, I haven't heard much since that initial report. I tend to think this is Jimbo trying to get something from Florida State that he doesn't have. So he is A, dangling his name out there, or B, just getting some stroke. You know, there's been a lot of coaches that just like to have their name out there mentioned. The other thing is, to your first question, no, I don't think there are going to be enough coaches to go around for these major hires. And by that, I mean enough home run hires where the guy's going to win the press conference and be, yeah, that's the absolute right guy we wanted. What does Nebraska do if they don't get Scott Frost? I think Dan Mullen's a pretty good fit at Tennessee, but who knows which way that's going to go. And where does that leave Texas A&M if, in fact, Jimbo isn't involved there? And then what about Arkansas? They just fired their AD. I think that tells you that, you know, Brett Bielema's days are numbered because they can't do anything there until they hire a new AD. And who are they left with? I think it's Mike Norvell. I was told this week that that's a perfect fit and he would go. But we'll see. I just don't think the musical chairs aspect of this is going to be interesting.
What's your read on Jeff Long at Arkansas? With him out now, does that just mean that Arkansas has put Brett Bielema on notice for next year? Because surely, like, you can't fire an AD in November and get a coach fired and hired within the next 2 months, can you?
I think you could get an interim AD, although that's not the best thing when you're hiring a new coach. But you could get a new AD. We don't know if they've got somebody lined up. I was surprised by the move itself. This tells me that Jeff Long is one of the most best thought of ADs in the country. It tells me that A, he didn't want to fire Brett Bielema, or that he couldn't be trusted by the administration to hire the next coach, and maybe both of those things, since Brett Bielema's, you know, lifespan has kind of worked out there at Arkansas. And that's unfortunate. I think he's very good. Think about that. You go from 1 year, you're the chairman of the selection committee, and the next year you're out of a job.
Yeah.
That's pretty dramatic.
And Arkansas is a perfect example of one of those schools that if the inventory is not there, why make a change for a guy like Brett Bielema? And I guess you have Mike Norvell, who's a potential
fit,
you know, played at Central Arkansas and would be interested. But this seems to me like a situation where it makes sense for them to wait. I mean, Nebraska, they may not have a choice if Mike Riley keeps on losing the way he is. It's going 4-8.
Oh, I think that's done. I mean, they've got a new AD in place, and this is, they're just not playing well. I think he was done when they lost to Ohio State 54-16 or whatever it was. And it just continues to get worse. On Mike Norvell at Arkansas, he would probably go there if they didn't have a permanent AD. I think that's how committed he would be to that job. So that might not be an issue for a Mike Norvell going to Arkansas.
So where does that leave Tennessee? Like, is Tennessee the fourth most, I guess Tennessee going to be the one in the game of musical chairs that's left out here begging Dan Mullen?
Yeah, and, you know, I don't think Tennessee wanted to fire Butch Jones, but it became, they had to. The fans wouldn't have tolerated it. But what's their plan? Who have they identified as the number one guy? As I said, I think Dan Mullen would be a perfect fit there. An upgrade in everything, an upgrade in facilities and resources, and maybe not recruiting, but maybe. And, you know, he's going to hit his head against the wall, a ceiling every year in the SEC West with Nick. You go to the East, you know, yeah, you still have to play Alabama every year, but, you know, it's until further notice, it is still a bit of a wide open division. Georgia may grab hold of it here pretty soon, but I think it'd be great for him. It'd be great for them. They just need to figure out what they're going to do.
When was the last time Tennessee had a really good football coach, right? And you could probably – I'd say Lane Kiffin is probably the last one, and he was only there for, what, a year? And you obviously get all the other baggage that goes along with Lane Kiffin. I think Dan Mullen, a proven football coach, if he was at Tennessee, and that's sort of what they need. There's so much around the program that could be successful. If they just had a really good football coach – man, I feel like Tennessee could get back quickly with Dan Mullen.
I do too. Although it's been a while since they've been back, last best football coach was Phil Fulmer at the turn of the century. Really,
right.
If you think about it, you know, he won a national championship, and they were pretty consistent. And then he became an 8-4 type of coach. Well, those people would kill for that now, just to be relevant again in the division. So there's a couple of Tennessee's my poster child for. I want to put together a group of schools whose fans and the perception of that school is way out of touch with what reality is. Tennessee is, and Nebraska is in there too, but I think Nebraska realizes its irrelevancy is growing.
Is A&M on your list there?
A&M's definitely on the list. Tennessee is, on a good day, the fifth best program in in the SEC. It's about right, isn't it? They won a championship in 98. They haven't won much of anything. They haven't won the conference since then. And that's 20 years. So, and how many major bowls have they gotten into and won since then? It's a place you've got to work hard. They've got to have best of everything, but it's a state where there aren't many players, typically. And you've got to go outside to get them. You've got to work hard. And you've got to recruit against Alabama. You've got to recruit against all those teams in that region. And you're the northernmost team from Florida and Georgia and Alabama and Auburn, who, you would hope you're going against them for players. And sometimes you aren't.
Well, recruiting does require great time management skills. And if you want to practice the best time management skills when it comes to finding tickets to any kind of sporting events or concerts, I mean, come on, you know exactly what it is. Get the SeatGeek app. And if you download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code 247 today, that's promo code 247, you get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and to make sure you get the most bang for your buck. They grade every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. And the best thing is that every single ticket is fully guaranteed. So I'm looking on the SeatGeek app right now. The Hurricanes are at home. Carolina Hurricanes here in Raleigh, North Carolina. Islanders are in town, and I can see the best prices around. I've got grades on each ticket: 91, 91, 90, 89, 89. So if you want to be, whether you're in section 104 or 314, you can get the most bang for your buck with the SeatGeek app, and you can get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Download the app, enter promo code 247 today. One more time, that's promo code 247 for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase with the SeatGeek app. Who do you have on your radar as a job that might open that could surprise you, either by a coach that leaves or perhaps another unexpected change?
Ole Miss, because I think now there's a feeling that they're going to keep Matt Luke, that these penalties are going to be so bad. And they should, by the way, they should drop any day. according to the timeline. I'm getting a feeling they're going to stick with Matt Luke and ride this thing out as sort of a bridge coach, because I don't know if they can get anyone of substance to come who will lead them out of this. If say they get 2 or 3 years postseason ban, you know, another 1 or 2 years postseason ban, which I'm hearing may happen. So, you know, there'd be people that would take that job. But Matt Luke hasn't been a failure. They're, what are they, 5-5? With another win would be bowl eligible in a season they know they can't go bowling. So, I would be surprised, I guess, right now if that would open up. Maybe a Washington State, if Mike Leach wants to go somewhere, if he wants to go to one of these openings, I'd be surprised at that.
The one that no one... Like, how is UCLA getting a pass? How is Jim Mora out there getting a pass right now? Is the buyout too big?
Yes. I was just asked that this morning by someone. I think the buyout is like $12 million, I think I've read. And they just spent, boy, hundreds of millions of dollars on their new facility, which is, it looks great on campus right there next to Pauley Pavilion. You know, I frankly don't know how much money or stomach they have to go spend, because it would take, with that buyout, $20 million to change staffs.
Yeah.
You know, do they give it another year where the buyout goes down? And, you know, because that's a lot of debt service to address and a lot of people to go to pay for that. I'm getting the feeling he gets another year. And without, you know, it's going to be without Josh Rosen. I don't know what they have coming back. But I agree with you, Barton, that why aren't we talking more about Jim Mora, who's just—it's just kind of been blah, you know. It's just kind of just collapsed there. There's not really anything to build on.
If you look at just sort of who deserves to be fired, anybody deserves to be fired more than Jim Mora.
I agree.
As uncompetitive as they've been, as listless as they look defensively, like, man, it's bad out there right now.
Yeah, it's almost like he's looking. He's already looking at his next coordinator's job in the NFL or something like that, because it's just there's no buzz or excitement there. You're right about that.
But there hasn't been for the Jim Mora tenure.
Like Most of it, no.
Like, it's Josh Rosen. Josh Rosen created it, and, you know, Brett Hundley was a fun quarterback that was able to get, what, one win against USC in his 3 years there?
Yeah.
You windows open and shut for UCLA. I think that, all right, so is it possible that the, I guess, Oregon State is going to have a change, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
The ACC right now, no changes unless someone leaves?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I don't think so. Dave Doran, it was suggested to me, Dave Doran may look around. But I don't know if there's anything that suits him. This is a long shot. If Kansas opens, he's from Kansas, but he's really, really risking his career if he does that. You know, he's from Kansas City. He's from here. He's from nearby. He's got a lot of ties here, but he's got as much chance as ruining his career as getting them to a bowl if he goes to Kansas, because it's been a black hole here. You guys know that.
Yeah.
One after the other.
What about David?
NC State can around and lose to Wake Forest this weekend, and that season goes from being a breakthrough year to disappointing.
Yeah.
In 1 week again.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think he stays. He stays where he is.
No.
Yeah. More, I'm looking it up. Mora's buyout is $12 million.
Mm.
Yeah. That's
no David Cutcliffe to Tennessee?
I don't think so at age 67. I was asked about that. You know, again, that would be a bridge coach, because it's the same thing that applies to Les Miles at age 63. What vision do you have for the program 5 or 6 years down the line when your coach is 63 in Les's case, or 67 with Butch Davis, unless you are looking for a bridge coach and there's nobody else there to get to the next guy? David Cutcliffe would do a fine job for however long he wants to coach, but you know you can see the end of the tunnel there because of his age.
It's a good year to be a bridge coach, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think so too.
And I wrote today about some coordinators that needed to be that were sort of ready for that next step. And I think a lot of that depends on which of those guys can get hired. Depends on what jobs open up. Have you heard any buzz yet, Dennis, about coordinators that are being considered? It seems like we're sort of got tunnel vision right now. And granted, the jobs that are open are limited right now. There's some speculation about other jobs that will come open. But is there any buzz about a school that's open to digging into the coordinator ranks?
I think you'd see it below the level we're talking about, because I think Florida has to hire a sitting head coach. I think Tennessee has to hire a sitting head coach. I think Texas A&M does, even if that's a Chad Morris, who doesn't do much for anybody. I think the schools we talked about initially are all should or are going to hire head coaches. Sitting head coaches. So no, I have not heard that sort of thing, much of it around. There's a lot. I'm looking at the Broyles list, and it's going to be really hard to pick the top assistant coach in the country. But there, I don't know if there's much, jobs for them to step up. Think about Manny Diaz at Miami, who's ultra hot right now. There's just not that much for him out there, unless Dan Mullen leaves and he goes back to Mississippi State where he coached.
You know, it's funny too. Like, if you look at the coaches that are really having success right now, and I noted this in the story I wrote today, Kirby Smart, coordinator, Scott Frost, who's killing it at UCF, coordinator at Oregon, Will Muschamp, coordinator, Lincoln Riley, coordinator. I know Muschamp had head coaching experience, but like it's a little bit of a harder leap to take. It's a little bit hard to get the fan base on board, but man, there's some really
there's a lot of good ones. There's a good ones. Yeah.
Could really have some success in the right spot.
Yeah. I mean, you think of a Mike Bobo who's doing what Jim McElwain did and going to Colorado State. The difference is he hasn't quite turned it yet. He's 20-17. So he's going to be, could he go somewhere? Yeah. But I don't know if there's a Power Five job out there for him just yet. Because he hasn't. They had a brutal loss to Boise State last week, by the way, where they blew a big lead. So he's not ready yet. The guys that are really hot this year are defensive guys, for the most part. And Alex Grinch at Washington State. T. Martin is one. T. Martin is the hottest guy. You hear him at Tennessee. That might be where they go. The offensive coordinator at USC, and obviously a hero at Tennessee, having won a national championship as a quarterback there. But I don't know how to judge him right now. Has the quarterback there progressed? I don't know. There's a lot of people would say no.
Well, wouldn't you say, Barton, you know this better than I, but T. Martin's been a primary recruiter for a long time of a lot of good players, right?
That dude can recruit. He's one of the best out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think T. Martin to Tennessee would be a fantastic hire for the Vols.
I do. The more I think about it,
I don't know that I think the Tennessee fans would get. I mean, I think they think that they, they're. If you're going to go from John Gruden to T. Martin in terms of expectation, then I don't know that they would welcome that quite as much. Whether it be a good hire or not, I'm interested that you guys both think that.
Well, except that I don't think John Gruden was ever a reality.
Well, exactly, but when we're basing on what the Tennessee fan base, landish expectations are.
Well, who do you think, who's number one, who's their guy? Who do you think they want? Forget Gruden, because that's not happening, I don't think. Who do you think?
But what if it does?
Yeah. Well, if it does, it does, but I don't think.
Dan Mullen makes no sense.
Yeah, makes no sense? Or
The most sense.
Most sense, okay, yeah.
If he would take it, I think, if you get a guy like Mike Norvell, he would be successful.
Yeah.
Probably, maybe not a sexy enough hire yet, given that he inherited a pretty good setup in Memphis for Justin Fuente. I just don't like. I've heard Justin Fuente's name float around, like for as far as terms of a target. Like, I don't see him leaving Virginia Tech for that. Like, I don't know. I think Tennessee is a tough job because I think the expectations, like you mentioned, Dennis, are higher than reality,
of the
perception of the job. So I think a guy like Mike Norvell would do great there, and probably is a great hire there. And yet, I think Tennessee fans would be relatively lukewarm on that move.
I think T. Martin, you have to look at it like floor ceiling. Let's say T. Martin fails, whatever that means, after 4 years. He can always go back to being a Power 5 coordinator somewhere because he's such a good recruiter and coordinator. Can Scott Frost, if he goes to Nebraska and fails there, get a Florida-like job? No. He's better taking the Florida job, in my opinion, because he's 42. He will have been in the state for two big jobs. If he doesn't work out there in 4 or 5 years, then he can go to Nebraska. They'll still take him with open arms. But I think if he goes to Nebraska and they've whiffed on three guys now. And I'm not saying he can't do the job. I'm saying Nebraska doesn't have the underpinnings right now to turn the corner. When there's a school in their own division that's in a state capital that is sparsely populated, that changes coaches all the time. And it has been in five of the last seven Big Ten championship games, and that's Wisconsin. So that's sort of a mountain to climb, but that's also the goal for Nebraska at this time. That's all they want to do is become competitive for that division.
When can we start talking about Lane Kiffin as a real candidate for a real job again? Or is it this
Not this year. I don't think this year. I don't think there's anything for him. Think about it. I mean, he wants to get back into the Power Five. If he takes a Group of Five job, that's a neutral slide. You know, that's an even swap. There just isn't something there for him this year. He's a National Coach of the Year candidate. I'll say that, six in a row, and you know, playing FIU this week. But I don't see him at Florida or Nebraska or Tennessee or Arkansas, or maybe Arkansas would take a shot at him. I don't know. Just to take a shot, but that's, you know, Oregon State, maybe. I don't know. Maybe they would take a shot at him.
No way. No way. Corvallis doesn't have enough for Lane.
Right. Well, yeah, you would think.
Yeah, he needs.
He's in Tuscaloosa.
And he hated it. He hated being kept in the bunker. Boca much more better suits his current state of mind. Yes. All right, if you were to make this weekend, our action is a little bit all over the place. Of course, the SEC has the annual SoCon week, a couple of ACC matchups that are a little bit interesting. As you begin to look ahead to rivalry week, who among the top college football playoff teams do you have the most confidence? If you had to put $100 behind one of the teams there in the top seven or eight in the college football playoff rankings to make it to the playoff, who do you have the most confidence in right now?
Auburn.
Auburn?
Wow.
Yeah, I think they're playing at a high level. Yeah, I think Auburn beats Alabama. Alabama's banged up. Auburn's at home. This is the biggest game in the rivalry since 2013 kick six. Everything just seemed to come together at the right time. They seem to be running the ball better than Alabama. They seem to be defending the ball better than Alabama. They're healthy. I think they see it in front of them. They win these three games in 4 weeks against top seven teams. They're in. You know, they win the SEC. They're in as a two-loss team. I just think that Alabama's nicked up. I don't think they're as good as we thought they were, even though they're 10-0, and I get all that. They're number one. But I have the most confidence in them going into the rivalry week. Michigan, Ohio State could go either way. Now that I look at it, Michigan's playing a little bit better. Neither of those teams, I don't think, are going to get to the playoff. Ohio State has the best chance. But I'm on the Auburn train right now.
Wow. I'm going to have to think about this. Barton, are
I'm
you?
On, yeah. You, the question was what, Chip? Who are you most confident will make the playoffs?
Yeah, $100. Any of the teams there in the top eight, who do you think is a surefire lock to make the playoff?
I don't hate that Auburn pick, but I would put my money on Oklahoma. I still think, man, what Baker Mayfield's doing right now is, I've said it, I think, to you on the pod before, Chip. Like, I don't know that there's a team, including Alabama, anywhere in college football that I would least want to play right now if I was in the playoff picture. because just how do you beat him? How do you outscore Field? And he's winning me over here week by week.
Yeah.
I've got Clemson.
I said, yeah, you like Clemson?
To make the playoff. I don't think this is a national championship team, but I think that when they show up in Charlotte, that Miami team, and you know, who knows what happens with Miami between now and then, but you know, all of those freshmen and sophomores, and you know, the one side of it is they're, you know, too young to even be influenced by the stage, but the other side of it is that Miami has not been to an ACC championship game, period, and Clemson has made quite a habit of not only getting there but figuring out ways to win. So I go championship game experience for Clemson over Miami, which means that I've got Clemson as my most confident team to make the playoff. I do not think they're going to win the national championship, but mm-hmm. between what they have with the Citadel, South Carolina, and then Miami, I think that of all the teams that are in the mix, I feel the most confident that they're going to go 3-0 in that run.
I thought you said, like, okay, who do you have the most confidence in during rivalry week? And it's kind of the same thing, but yeah, you know, Clemson at South Carolina. You
that's
know,
dangerous. 7:30
Upset kick. Alert. Yeah,
man, y'all are on it. Oh,
with Clemson, like, who have they really impressed you in their beating? I mean, I know that it's a tough schedule, but you know, they messed around with Florida State. They messed around with NC State. 14-point win over Georgia Tech. Lost to Syracuse. 14-point win over Wake Forest. You know. 14-point win over Virginia Tech. Like, where do they look like they're I mean, I know you don't think they're unbeatable, but that to me, the fact that they're not, that leaves the door open for South Carolina or Miami or someone to sneak in. And so I think they will lose, but I am not super, I don't trust them a whole lot.
It's a continuation of, and I hate the term, but I mean, it is a continuation of the same, like, excellent play. In the term that I was about to use that I'm going to stay away from is clutch gene, but it's like they close games out. Like, the scores lined up from 2015 and 2016 are very similar to what we have in 2017, and they were 28-2 in that stretch. A lot of, like, you know, just figuring out ways to get a couple stops here, a couple plays there, you know, like the one big play that pops to be able to get a win. Like, it, even though the fact that Deshaun Watson is not under center is why I think that Clemson's not going to win a national championship, but there are so many other traits from the last two seasons that I think still have carried over to where I believe in this team's ability to close.
I was at their most impressive game, arguably, September 30th at Virginia Tech, and the final score didn't indicate how dominant they were that day. What'd you say? It was 14? I think it was 14 or 17.
Yeah, it was 31-17.
31-17. And they ran the Hokies out of the building with that defense. And I have concerns with that defense since the Syracuse game. I'm sorry. I thought they'd be much more dominating to this point. 31 to NC State. You know, Florida State is Florida State. They could play till next March and not score a touchdown with that group they have now. But I don't know why. They just seem vulnerable to me in a big matchup. And I agree with you, Chip. But, you know, they may not win the national championship. They'll probably get there. But at South Carolina and then Miami, those are two significant challenges 2 weeks apart on the road and on a neutral field. So we'll see.
Should be interesting. Make sure you follow Dennis on Twitter at DennisDoddCBS. You can follow him at Barton Simmons. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Dennis, the Dodd father. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, guys.
The magic bullet they now have in their holster, which they will apply. Nick Saban and Jim Harbaugh make a combined $20 million this season. Those two guys alone will make $13 million more than the entire MAC.